Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. The Thomas Crown Affair, How to Steal a Million, Ocean's 12. Art heists are a popular subject for films, television, and books. A talk this Thursday presented by the Biggs Museum of American Art brings two experts to Dover's Schwartz Center for the Arts to talk about real-life art crimes. Robert Whitman is a former FBI special agent who founded the Bureau's Art Crimes Team. During his career, he helped recover hundreds of millions of dollars worth of stolen art. He'll be joined at the talk by Laura Evans, distinguished teaching professor at the University of North Texas and an art crime historian. On this edition of Arts Playlist, Delaware Public Media's Martin Matheny speaks with Whitman about the real world of art crime and his career.
Well, first, tell me about this event in Dover and what you and your co-presenter, Laura Evans, will be talking about.
So Thursday, June 25th, we're going to be doing a presentation, Laura Evans and myself, about art crime. And it's going to be two different aspects. Laura is a professor out of a university in Texas, has written a book about art crime. And she'll be speaking about the history, some of the stories of art theft investigations, some of the stories from the past that are interesting and insightful about art crime. And art criminals, for that matter. On the other hand, I was an FBI agent for 20 years. My primary job at the FBI was art crime investigations. So I'm going to be talking about certain stories involving thefts, frauds, forgeries, fakes, those types of things that we investigated at the FBI. Most of my work throughout that time was as an undercover agent. So generally speaking, it's not hard to prove that material is stolen. It's hard to prove the knowledge. In other words, that someone knows that that material is stolen, or to bring it out of the woodwork, so to speak, to get it back. So I did a lot of undercover work, worked in maybe 20 countries around the world, and we'll be talking about some of those stories. So the listeners who come will be hearing it from the man who was in the room, so to speak. That was my job.
And when you were working undercover, was that posing as generally like a buyer or an appraiser?
Yeah, my undercover operations included all different aspects of art, of the art business. You know, a lot of people know about art history. They'd understand that, you know, Renoir had arthritis at the end of his life and had a hard time holding his brushes, and that Monet went blind and Van Gogh cut off his ear. These were all famous stories of artists. When it comes to art crime, it's about the art business world. How to do a deal in the art business world. So I would pose as a shady dealer. I would be a unintelligent or uneducated buyer to be defrauded, an easy mark, so to speak. I'd be an art professor, depending on authentication and what they wanted me to do. I posed as a buyer for the Russian mob. So it all depended on what the specific case entailed, and I would do that.
And you started the art crime unit within the FBI. Was there institutional resistance to that at first?
Well, it didn't start till 2005. So I was probably, I'd say, almost 17 years into my career at the FBI. And from 1993 to 2005, I had been working art almost exclusively. And I think the FBI realized that there's some great publicity aspects to recovering stolen art. So in the end, I think they saw the benefit of setting up an art crime team. And quite honestly, I had wanted one for quite a while, working with the Carabinieri in Italy and the OCBC in Paris, and having worked with the Art and Antique Squad at Scotland Yard. I identified that we needed an FBI art squad, something that would be comparable to all these Western European nations around the world. So I went to headquarters after doing a specifically interesting case in Copenhagen, Denmark, working with the Swedish National Police and the Danish police, where we recovered a $35 million stolen Rembrandt. After recovering that, we went to headquarters and we convinced them that it would be a good idea to start this art crime team.
I don't want to ask you to give away all the good stuff before your talk, but is there one particular investigation that you're especially proud to have been a part of?
Well, there were many, many investigations involving everything from the Antiques Roadshow to undercover operations from gunpoint thefts, to recoveries of paintings from the Louvre in Paris and also the Musée d'Orsay. So there were many different operations. One that I usually don't talk about, but I'm kind of proud of it, was there was a theft, a heist from the National Museum in Zimbabwe. And an individual went in, stole two Makonde masks, which are the cultural heritage of the country, and a number of other pieces out of the main museum. He made his way to the airport and then bribed guards to let him go back to Poland. So we had he then offered these things for sale to a collector in Denver, Colorado. And as a result, I posed as a buyer, you know, an undercover operation in Poland and Warsaw. We were able to recover these pieces for the National Museum in Zimbabwe. And I thought that that was really a great recovery. It wasn't the largest dollar recovery. Yeah, there was one piece we recovered worth $100 million. It was an original, one of the original 13 copies of the Bill of Rights. But it represented the cultural heritage of the country. And as a result, you know, I thought that that was a particularly, you know, important investigation.
And you bring up what I think is a really important point here, because you're talking about the Bill of Rights, you're talking about documents, flags, masks, you mentioned baseball cards. This is about so much more than just expensive paintings from museums.
Right. You know, when we talk about this, I'll bring this up at the talk. The fact is that it's a $200 billion industry every year, bought and sold, all of the cultural heritage, all the cultural property in the world, 200 billion. About 6 billion of that, with a B, is the art crime industry. And that 200 billion number isn't just art. It's not just sculptures, prints, and paintings. It represents, you know, cultural heritage like antiquities, like I said, baseball cards, magazines, comic books, antique automobiles. All of these things are part of the cultural property of the world. And so all of these things come under that aspect, under the art crime team, to be recovered. Even, you know, astronauts' logbooks, for that matter, and, you know, medals given to astronauts on their return to Earth that are stolen. All of these things are part of that cultural heritage, not just Rembrandts and Renoirs, but Mickey Mantle baseball cards as well.
Which can go for a fairly tidy sum.
Well, the record for a Mickey Mantle baseball card from 1952 is $12 million.
I wonder, and the span of your career, I think, is a wonderful frame for this. The explosion in technology that we've seen in the past 20 to 30 years, how has that changed the world of art crime, both from the criminal side and from the investigation side?
Well, you know, the when I first started doing these investigations back in 1988, it's been a long time. There was no internet. There was no situation like that. And what really changes in the world, really throughout civilization, actually, is the speed of travel and the speed of information. That's really what changes. Everything else pretty much stays the same, you know, when it comes to human beings. But since then, you can see with the exponential speed of travel and information around the world, within minutes of an art heist, everybody in the world knows about it. It's on every internet, it's on the internet all over the world. And that makes a difference, because now it's much more difficult to try to monetize that art once it's been stolen. So you can't take it and, you know, make believe it's yours, you know, and come forward with it and try to sell it under, you know, on some secondary market. Everybody knows. Secondly, the speed of communication, that's the speed of communication, and then travel as well. It's difficult to move these artworks internationally. In Europe, it's a little bit easier because of the EU. They could go between countries without a lot of customs investigations, but you can't bring it into the U.S. It's very difficult to do that. So that's made a little bit of a difference as well. So I think those things have changed as far as the heists are concerned. You know, the standard heist itself, if it's a gunpoint robbery, it's still rushing in, pointing a gun, and running around stealing the art. That's how it works. And then making a getaway. It's still the same. It's the same as Jesse James robbing a bank, you know, so to speak, when it comes to heist. And the investigation is a little bit different now, too, because of the use of the internet. It's more difficult to go undercover. Undercover agents have to be very careful about their identities. They have to have good, what we call backstopping, which means they have a legitimate history, a storyline that can be checked on the internet. And so all of that's a very, very extensive. It's very complicated, and it's got to be done correctly. And so as a result, it's more difficult to be able to do that than it was, say, 30 years ago.
Well, finally, I want to ask one follow-up about a specific piece of technology and kind of looking into the future. Artificial intelligence is growing exponentially, and I wonder if that creates new concerns, especially when it comes to forgery.
Yeah, you know, one of the newest technologies, Warren, that has come out is AI, artificial intelligence. And that creates a situation where it's easier to create forgeries. But ultimately, the artwork that's very highly valued, that is done by, you know, let's say the Abex artists like Jackson Pollock, Mark Rothko, Clifford Still, these pieces that go for literally hundreds of millions of dollars, they have to have a provenance. They have to have a history. So those pieces that are in the catalog raisonné, they call it, which is the catalog of all of the artwork that's been put together academically, these catalogs. If it's not in the catalog, then they're not going to command those prices. They have to be authenticated. And there's very few pieces that are coming out of the woodwork today that can be authenticated. And so as a result, people aren't paying those kind of prices for those artworks. So, you know, you can do forgeries of lesser pieces, you know, a few thousand dollar pieces that, you know, look like 1880, you know, farm scenes, genre scenes, that type of thing. But they're not going to bring the prices that these forgers are looking for. So it's still difficult to be able to monetize even AI forgeries.
So you can't just go to ChatGPT and come back a few minutes later and go, guys, I found a new Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, you can do that. But then you got to prove it's the new Jackson Pollock. And that's very difficult. In fact, it's nearly impossible.
Thanks to retired FBI special agent and founder of the FBI's art crimes team, Robert Whitman, for joining our Martin Matheny on this edition of Arts Playlist. Whitman and University of North Texas professor Laura Evans give their art crime talk presented by the Biggs Museum this Thursday at the Schwartz Center for the Arts in Dover. Tickets and information are at biggsmuseum.org. And we wrap up The Green next with Enlighten Me, where we hear stories from student journalists at the University of Delaware. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.